gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
Ladies and gentlemen, this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report, coming to you live from our radio and television studios here in beautiful Northwest Pennsylvania. Glad that you're joining us. Thank you so much for your belief and your trust in us. Wow. What a week, huh? It is Friday. Friday, May 12th, 2017. I love to say that because some time ago the producer says, no dates. It's all right. Eric the Tech, actually, not the engineer. Hey! There's a coup. There's been a coup in the studio. That's right. Three broadcast platforms. Global Star Radio Network. I want to thank Global Star for everything that they do. Class act, Global Star Satellite Radio, Global Star Radio Network, what a class act. And of course, BTR, Blog Talk Radio, as well as YouTube. We're archived on YouTube as well. Just kind of a little bit of housekeeping because we've got we're gonna get right into things. We have our producer, program director John Robertson, in studio this week, all the way from the other side of the country, checking out the operation. You know, so it's been a tremendous work week, and of course last weekend, a week ago today, we were in Chicago. Talking at Pastor Paul Begley's conference, and of course from that, just off that, this weekend hit the ground running on Monday, and of course just a tremendous week of programming, and this is no different. We have coming up a man that I met once. I doubt that he'll even remember who I am. I met him at our courthouse here in Erie, Pennsylvania. And he's probably saying, where? I'm going to ask him if he remembers. All I did was said hello and shook his hand, and I'm not even sure I introduced myself. I don't recall, but I knew him, and he was here for the defense of, in the defense on an appeal on a arson case, which although I was on the other side, looking back at it and looking at it, I disagree with the individual that I was there with, actually the lead detective, on this case, I guess he was the lead detective at the time. I disagree with his conclusions now. But having said that, nonetheless, but Frank Serpico is the guy I'm referring to. He was, and everyone should know that name. Everyone. Everyone in this country, at least. Everyone in the world should know Frank Serpico, the name Frank Serpico. I'm not talking about the movie, although I am talking about the movie as well. But I'm talking about the man. The original, in my view, the original whistleblower, but he's not really a whistleblower, he's a lamp lighter. How's that? That's the right terminology to use. He entered into the New York Police Department back in 9/11/59. How do you like that? And he's from Brooklyn. And he exposed police corruption in the late 60s, early 70s that prompted then Mayor John Lindsay to appoint the landmark Knapp Commission to investigate the internal workings of the NYPD. And, of course, the 1973 film was made about his life. It was based on the book by Peter Moss, which starred Al Pacino in the title role as Serpico, for which Pacino was nominated for an Oscar. But all thanks should go to Frank Serpico, the man. Do we have him on? We do. Mr. Serpico.
Doug Hagman?
This is Doug Hagman speaking, sir. That's me talking, sir.
Why, of all the juice joints in the world, I had to get invited to your radio program. Remember that line from Casablanca?
I do. Yes.
All right, how's this for you? How's this for an 80-year-old Lou DiNicola?
There it is. There it is.
Do you remember
that
name?
Yes, sir. I certainly do. So you do remember.
I think, I think that Lou was as innocent as the day is long. He was a brave Vietnam veteran. He was suffering from Agent Orange, and it was a terrible situation. It was a tragedy that happened. He was with a friend of his and in a neighbor's house, and while his friend was making whatever whoopee with the woman that had the two kids,
yep.
Lou fell asleep. You know, they had been drinking, they'd been smoking a little weed, and the place torched up. The candle had burned on the television, and anyway, they tried to hang poor Lou. And I remember when I came down to Pennsylvania, I thought, what the hell am I doing here? You know, Ramsey Clark, I was doing some work for him pro bono. In fact, I'm doing a documentary about him now, because people forget, or some don't even know, what an American hero he is, with the civil liberties and civil rights. And he's a former Marine and United States Attorney General. And he asked me if I would look into the case. And I remember being in court, and one of the cops came up to me and he said, you know, Frank, if you knew what we knew, you'd be on our side. I said, great, tell me what you know. Well, he didn't tell me anything, so I guess he didn't know anything. But
And that was the guy I was with. That was the man I was with, and as far as I'm concerned, I guess I could say this, you're absolutely correct. Yes.
And, you know, they never tested the combustibility. You know, the poor guy was a roofer, Agent Orange, he's working there, he's having a couple of beers, he didn't even drive. They said he got on his bicycle, and, you know, anyway. So here we are. It's a small world.
It is, and when I, and I want to thank Bill McIntosh, he's a good man, and Acosta Media, I'll tell you what, yeah, when I was, I sent Bill a little note saying, you know, I doubt that, he'll probably remember the case, but certainly not me, but the man that had come up to you and said, if you knew what I knew or we knew, you know, you'd switch sides or whatever. That was the man, that I was. He was the lead detective in the case. And, he has since written a book, not about this case, but about some other things. And anyway, but it's great to have you. It's so great to have you. It really is. You are a legend. And for those people who don't know, New York City, New York NYPD police officer, exposing corruption. You know, I thought long and hard about, talking to you, Mr. Serpico. And let me just ask you, I've heard so many interviews, but Mr. Serpico, if you can just tell the audience who you really are, who you are, because, the demographically, maybe some don't know you. If you can just give us a little bit of background, I'd really appreciate it.
Well, I'll tell you a little, tidbit, because in fact, I just had a documentary come out at the Tribeca Film Festival in New York, and it's about, you know, what happened. The director, a guy named Antonino D'Ambrosio, he found my partner, one of the guys who was with me the night I got shot, and he also interviewed Ramsey Clark. And when I went to visit Ramsey for the documentary, we've been friends, long friends. He's one of the best friends anyone could ask for. And I gave him a portrait of myself that was done by a guy who does portraits, Americans Who Tell the Truth. I'm embarrassed because his name for the moment, but when I gave Ramsey the portrait, I said, do you know this guy? And he answered, nobody knows this guy. And, you know, as you said, there's so much said, and, you know, everybody has their opinion. There's been books written by commissioners and district attorneys, all trying to undermine what I did. Because it's like the the Holocaust deniers, you know. They say if you deny it long enough, people start to believe it. And we're living in a time now that George Orwell said, in a time of universal deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act. And I think we all know where we are today. We're being, you know, flooded with double talk. And but anyway, in answer to your question, I don't know how I could sum it up, but I was a cop in the street, and, you know, I knew cops, you know, took a little money, a little traffic money, and, you know, so you're a good cop. You just tell them, look, I'm not interested, okay? And they say thanks, because that's double for them, you know? And then I got assigned to a unit of vice and gambling, and it was big money. And after that, I went to narcotics. Now, all of a sudden, somebody sticks an envelope in my hand with $300. And I thought, what's this? And he says, this is your share from Jewish Max. And I thought, wow, you know, it's not an illusion anymore. Now I got it in my hand, you know. And I had met a cop in plain clothes school who had connections, and he was twirling his baton in Central Park when he came across a guy who engaged him in conversation and said, gee, you're pretty bright for a patrolman. He says, I'm a graduate of Amherst. And he says, isn't that a coincidence? So am I. Here's my card. Call me on Monday. The guy that gave him his card was Jay Kriegel, Mayor Lindsay's right-hand aide. And before long, without making any grandiose arrest or anything, this fella, David Dirk, ended up in the Department of Investigations. So I met him in plainclothes school, and he would count around, you know, all his connections. So I thought, oh, I'll call that guy up, Dirk. And he goes, well, he's practically salivating. He says, I know exactly what we're going to do with this money. We're going to bring it to my boss. I said, which one? He said, Captain Ferran. Now, this is the Department of Investigations, which was under Mayor Lindsay, whose job it was to investigate, among other things, police corruption. So I said, was he a lieutenant in plain clothes? And he said, so what? I said, what, are you kidding me? Plain clothes is rotten to the core. I don't trust this guy. And he said, do you think you're the only cop, Serpico? I said, no, I never said that. Okay, we're in front of this guy in his office. The movie has him, you know, eating lobster in some fancy joint. But he says to me, what are you giving me this for? I said, well, I thought that... He says, well, you can do one or two things. I said, yeah. He said, you can force my hand to go to the commissioner, and before long, they'll find you face down in the East River. And I said, well, what's the other thing? He said, forget about it. So I'm walking out. I say to Dirk, go F yourself, you stupid son of a bitch. Now, come on, Frank, I didn't know. Oh, okay. Then he comes up, he keeps coming up with ideas of who we're going to. Now, I'll skip through to the main man. Okay, now we're going directly to my boss, Commissioner Freeman. Okay, that's his boss. We go right to his apartment, and I told him the whole story about the corruption. I had facts, figures, names, all police officials. He does nothing. Now, in the documentary that I just spoke of, I'm being questioned by the Knapp Commission. And the guy says, and did you tell Commissioner Freeman all this? I said, yes. And he said, and who was present? I said, you know, Detective Dirk. And what did the commissioner say? He said, what do you want me to do about it? And nice. For his, whatever you want to call it, stupidity, ineptness, corruption, duplicity, they made Arnold Freeman a Supreme Court judge.
Wow.
And what I'm saying, Doug, is that's where we are today. It's not the cop in the street who's doing the bureaucrats' dirty work with all the taxpayers' money that they squander, and then they send the cop out to pick on some poor little guy who's got a busted headlight or is, you know, and do the quota system. New York City Police Department just paid out $75 million to 12 cops who complained about the quota system. So if we took that money and put it into training, and the training has to begin before you become a cop. I wrote a letter to Clinton in 94. I tried to get a medal for an honest cop. His name is Sergeant Joe Trombley. You might have heard that after the Knapp Commission, the Mullen Commission came into effect, also to investigate police corruption. Police corruption doesn't happen every 20 years. It's ongoing. It's just once in a while the pimple burst and they, you know, appoint a commission. Now, the Knapp Commission did a fabulous job investigating. They said cops were riding shotgun, murdering people, sticking people up. Unbelievable. There's a movie out now called The 7-5, and it's about a cop, one of the dirtiest to ever wear the uniform, called Michael Dowd. He was snorting cocaine off the dashboard of his police car. He would arrest a drug dealer and take him to another drug dealer to be assassinated so he would get rid of the competition. And in the documentary that's called The 7-5, you hear the drug dealer, they're asking him, and did you kill this guy? And he's got a grin on his face, and he says, let's just say he's not around anymore. And this guy got 3 years in jail, and they deported him. The cop got 14 years, and he's out now acting like a movie star. And when he was getting investigated by the Mullen Commission, this is all in the documentary, The 7-5, which was the 75th precinct,
right.
The examiner says, Mr. Dowd, do you consider yourself a police officer or a criminal? He said, both.
Ugh.
And in the course of your activity, did you commit any crimes, felonies of, you know, this, the other thing? Yeah. How many? Hundreds. Did your fellow officers know about it? Yep. Well, why didn't they turn you in? You don't turn in another cop. So when cops hear somebody bad-mouthing them, then get rid of the scum that you got wearing your uniform and start acting like human beings that are out there to serve the public so you can be proud of your uniform when you go home and people look up to you.
Amen to that. And your honor, your integrity, your character during, you know, during your undercover work and actually trying to rid the NYPD of corruption was what led to the lack of backup when you were shot on February 3rd, 1971 during a drug raid. And you were shot in the, it's my understanding, Mr. Serpico, and correct me if I'm wrong. You went to an apartment in, Brooklyn. You were first through the door,
it's interesting because this is also in the documentary. The director, as I said earlier, found one of the guys I was with that night. And here's the thing, you know, Commissioner Murphy, who did nothing, I confronted him a while back before his demise, and then another guy, James Fife, who wrote a book, Above the Law, who was also police commissioner in charge of training, they totally fabricated the facts on the night I got shot. And
okay.
Pacino didn't help because, you know, he knew I had a 9mm. That was my backup.
And, that was you were the first guy to carry on the force a 9mm, I believe, right?
That's correct. It took them 25 years to catch up. And they couldn't reprimand me because I still carried my 38 snub-nose special. And that's what I had in my hand when, okay, the two guys I was with said, just get the door open, leave the rest to us. You know, I had to make a buy. I hit the door with my shoulder. I busted the chain. I had my shoulder and arm in the door. I had the guy covered. Now, one guy, just like in the movie, was standing directly to my left with his revolver drawn. Another guy was behind me at the top of the stairwell with his revolver drawn. Now, the thing was, as soon as I got the door open, they were supposed to rush in, right? So they must have heard the chain break and me shouting police. It was like the loneliest feeling in the world. I was just standing there, and I thought, this is it. I turned in anger to the guy on my left. I said, what the hell are you waiting for? Give me a hand. And he still froze there. When I turned back, I got shot point blank in the face. I returned fire. I hit the assailant. He left a blood trail. So now, in the movie, you know, Pacino can't get his big 9mm in the door, which starts upsetting the truth factor of history. So now, this guy was just interviewed on camera for this documentary. And one of the things I asked him was, I said, how come there was no 1013? Now, 1013 is a police code, means officer down. And he says, no, 1013, there was a sector car, the police car responded. I said, one police car? Did you ever have any 1013s called on you? Yeah. And what happened? Wow, lots of cops. I said, right. One sector car, that call was put out by a Hispanic gentleman in the building. He was an elderly man. He called, the signal was 1010, means investigate. Investigate, shots fired. They never put out a 1013. Then, man. The other thing he says on camera, you know what I always had against you? You know, you want them to go after the bosses, go ahead. I don't want to, but don't go after the little cop. Go after the bosses, because without them, the other guys wouldn't be able to do what they were doing. I said, I went after the little guys? I said, I went after the system. And then the director cuts to the Knapp Commission again, and I'm testifying in 1972. And the head counsel says, and Mr. Serpico, did they offer you to wear a wire? I said, yes. And did you wear it? I said, no. They said, why not? I said, because I didn't want to get the little cops I was working with. I wanted to get the bosses at the top where the problem lies. So I showed this guy that he didn't know what he was talking about. And that's the way it is. You know, they create their own illusion. Then,
right.
A former district attorney writes a book. I would have never heard about it except a woman when I had a website before somebody messed with it. She said, Mr. Serpico, did you read this book? And I said, no. So I got a copy written by a former district attorney where he plays himself in all his novels. And he's looking out the window, and the chief of police says, you know, I became a cop because I wanted to do the right thing. And then I see these suits looking at me like, yeah, I know what you really are. That Frank Serpico, internal affairs, turned him, and instead of pointing the finger at himself, he pointed it at everybody else. He was as dirty as the rest of them. Well, first, nobody turned me. I turned them.
Right.
So I said, I'm going to sue this son of a bitch for whatever he's worth. You see his picture on the cover, the picture of respectability on the JFK Assassination Commission, Martin Luther King Assassination Commission. Whose word are people going to take? His or some cop? Well, fortunately, I prevailed and sued the bastard, and I got a letter of apology that I can show anyone, anywhere, anytime. So this is what they were doing. Kept coming up after me until this very day. an 80-year-old man, I'm 81 now, in this town, a judge and a district attorney stabbed me in the back. And it was, they were in collusion with this builder who wanted to build a house on wetlands adjoining my property. He cut down my trees. He bulldozed my property with my surveyor's pen. That alone is a $500 fine. I hired a man from Lake George because no one around here, either would I trust them or would they represent me. And the builder got a guy, a local guy, and my guy, he came, he measured the trees, identified them. One, I got this all on video and tape. And I say to the builder, oh, look at this, was a nice maple tree. Why did you cut it? Oh, that was a beautiful mulberry tree. It was here when I bought the property in 1968, okay? And you can't replace one of those trees. I said, why did you cut it? Well, it was broken at the top. I don't care. It's on my property. So I called the cops, state troopers. I said, I want this man arrested. What for? What for? This is what for. You want to do this to me? You want to arrest me? I said, look what you did to the property. Wetlands, preserve, floodplain. In front of me, on camera, officer, you want to take another walk around the property, just you and me? What am I, stupid or something? I just did an article with a 29-year-old reporter for the Daily News. I told her the story, and she went, wow. You don't have to say, hey, can I buy you? No, that, it says it right there. Right. You want to take the cop turns on me.
Right.
And he's threatening me with trespassing. Then the district attorney decides he's going to take the case himself. Now, when it comes to the damages hearing, he was charged with four counts of trespassing. He pleaded guilty to one. I walk into the hearing. I say to the district attorney, where's my witness? He says he won't be needed. Then he turns to the defendant and he says, Mr. Douchebag, do you want to withdraw your guilty plea at this time? And he said, nah. And then the judge says, I'll go down myself and I'll decide the damages. But you're an arborist, you know. The district attorney should have objected. The court is not allowed to go to the scene of the crime unescorted. I said, Your Honor, may I go with you? No. The defendant.
No.
Hey, judge, you'll call me before you go? I'll call you. His guy said, $350 for firewood at most, the damage. Never mind, to this day, I can't sleep sometimes if I go look at it. My property is totally eroding into his property. The judge awarded me $350 for firewood. Is there something wrong with this picture?
There's everything wrong with this picture, Mr. Serpico. And yes, the, oh my, okay, go ahead. Wow.
When I went to the Tribeca Film Festival, and I went on stage, I said, you know, I'm 81 years old. I've really been blessed. They did a book about me, a movie, a documentary. I have everything I ever needed in life. Good friends, good people. But there's only one thing I ever wanted, and I never got, and that was justice. And I defy anybody to contradict what I just said.
You know, I don't think
I
there
got
is
the Medal
any
of Honor. They think they're degrading me. They're degrading that medal for every man and woman that gave their life for that medal. I got the Medal of Honor. They still haven't given me the certificate. And a couple of years ago,
They handed it to you like a pack of cigarettes across the counter, if I understand it correctly, right? As opposed to a ceremony.
Exactly, with my promotional shield to detective, right? So now, a couple of years ago, the last commissioner was Kelly, who was a sergeant. And by the way, Murphy, the so-called reform commissioner, he was an inspector when the corruption was going on. It's not that he didn't know anything about it. He left to become the chief of another state, and then he came back. And anyway, I'm walking over to the wall here because I asked for my Medal of Honor certificate, and the commissioner's office Ray Kelly, said, yeah, come to my office, come to the commissioner's office and pick it up. And I thought, well, just put it in the mail, okay? Because maybe they wanted a photo op or news or whatever. I said, just put it in the mail. This is what I got in the mail. Police Department, City of New York, Office of the Police Commissioner, Certificate of Promotion presented to Frank Serpico. This is my promotional certificate to detective, signed by Raymond W. Kelly on May 14th, 1971. So, I mean, these guys are like in La La Land. You know what I mean?
Man. Okay. Wow. You just look, and ladies and gentlemen, I just want to say this. I've got the utmost respect for this man, Frank Serpico. He stands for everything that is right and good, in my view, at least. That, you know, he entered the police force on September 11th. Isn't that interesting? 1959. He became a full off probation in 1960 or 61, but nonetheless, he's trying to do the right thing, and you know, all he wants is justice. And he's denied justice to this day. Mr. Serpico, one question. What can we do to get you justice? That's my first question, above everything else.
Well, first of all, you know, I don't know if man is capable of justice. I'm satisfied. You know, when you do something, you don't do it for a reward. You do it for the good. You know?
Sure.
Again, in the documentary, because, you know, people don't understand the background, some of the scenes. You know, when I left the department, I just wanted to get away from everything. So I went to live in Switzerland. And at the time, otherwise, you know, they work on your mind. You know, I got PTSD and I got traumatic brain injury. I still got the bullet in my head. But thank God, I get up in the morning, I walk down my driveway, I say, hallelujah, man, you still want me here. I get up in the morning, I say, what do you want me to do today? You know, and there's lots to be done. You do good for its own sake. So I was in Switzerland. I had a witness there, a deputy commissioner that I knew, a friend of mine. My phone rings, and it's the FBI. They want me to come back to testify for interstate crime. And I said to the guy, is this the same FBI I so admired in my youth? I said, well, I hope so. I said, where the hell were you when I needed you? I said, I'm trying to get my life together, and you come and bust my chops. You know what you can do, don't you? He says, only fair to tell you, we have a subpoena out for you. If you don't respond, you'll be held in contempt and subject to arrest. So I had to flee Switzerland in the snow with my dog, and
you're dragging stuff, clothes under your arm, your belongings on your body. That's it, man. And running through the snow, right?
Well, like I'm a fugitive from justice. And
right.
This is the FBI. What are they even doing outside of the country? But this is how they work. Now, I'm sure they have some good agents working there, but, you know, I can tell you stories. You've heard of, you know, even Secret Service, you know, rowdying, partying when they're supposed to be protecting. The problem is human nature is, I don't know, I think it's the worst of God's creatures. No other man disrespects his creator and the wonderful gifts that have been bestowed on us, this planet. I'm an herbalist. I studied herbs. I studied Chinese medicine. The doctor wants to give me a new hip, a new knee. I said, don't hold your breath. I walk. I bike. I treat it all with alternative medicine. But the AMA doesn't want that, you know, because then you don't buy their drugs and they give you this one and you need that one to offset that one. You work with drugs, they ruin your body. Nature's herbs that God gave us. There was a book written by a woman named Maria Trebin. She was in Switzerland. She said, people pass God's pharmacy every day on the way to the drugstore. Now, God's pharmacy has long been desecrated because, you know that song, Build Paid Paradise, Build Me a Parking Lot. You know, I'm living in the woods. I want to keep this place forever wild, except for that, you know, piece of schmutz that, you know, wrecked, you know, a cliff with swallows' yep. nests in it that yep. eat their own weight in insects every day. You know, people aren't environmental Neanderthals, you know. They think, you know, they call people tree huggers or whatever. They don't understand the function of nature and the balance with human beings and all the creatures that are on it. So, anyway, I end up in Germany. I buy a camper, and I drive through Europe, and I end up in Holland. And I rent a place on the canal, the Spaarne, and in Harlem. With a double A. The Harlem in New York is named after it, but it only has one A. And I'm in my garden, I hear a scream, I look, I see something floundering in the water and some little kids on the dock. So I don't know, your mind goes into automatic. And I had my bike by my door. I lived right on the bridge. I was the first door on the bridge. I go over the bridge, I pull the girl out of the water, and next thing, a crowd starts forming, and I hear, neon, neon, the cops are coming. I say, shit, I got to get out of here before the cops. Otherwise, because in the documentary, I say, here goes Holland, but they don't know what I'm talking about because, you know, his editing work. Now, here's what I was talking about. A couple of nights later, and what I was saying, I don't need the credit for it. It's the saving of life. It's like I think, wow, if the FBI didn't kick me out of Switzerland, I wouldn't be able to save this kid's life. So that's how I look at life. So a couple of nights later, my dog Alfie is barking. There's a guy breaking into a boat on the canal. So they say, once a cop, you know. So I call the cops, and then I say, come on, Alfie. And we go out. The cops got this guy with his arms full of booty that he took off the boat, and I thought, wow, they treat this guy like a human being, you know. And so then the cop says to me, what is your name? What's your name? And I said, I don't want to get involved. And I thought, wow, how many times did I hear that when I was a cop, you know? So he insists, what's your name? So I sheepishly say, Serpico, I'm a retired New York City police detective. And the next morning, two detectives come to my door. They don't say nothing. They just escort me, put me in this car. They take me to police headquarters. And I thought, well, here goes Holland. So they take me. I see the cells in the basement. They take me through the basement. Stainless steel. I thought, wow. You know, you can eat off the floor, you know. Not the dungeons they had in New York. But they don't put me in there. And so I thought, oh, well, what am I here for, you know? They take me up a couple of flights of stairs. I'm standing in front of a glass panel door that says, Commissaris, Commissioner. They knock on the door. He says, come in. We go in, and this gray-haired gentleman snaps to. He comes toward me, reaches out with his hand, and in Dutch he says, Meneer, meneer, mag ik u de hand geven? May I shake your hand? And I was like, what? I was like, I thought it was like a dream or something. On his desk, wow. He's got a copy of the book Serpico. And when I regained my awareness, I said, it's always a pleasure to shake the hand of a police officer that wants to shake my hand. And the commissioner's name was Commissioner Endlich, which in German means finally. And I thought, isn't that a coincidence? I finally met a police commissioner that wants to shake my hand. So that's what part of my life has been like. And
you had to go all the way to Holland or end up in Holland to get that finally. Interesting.
I don't want to wax poetic, but they say a prophet in his own country, you know.
Yeah, exactly. No, and you're right. You're absolutely right. And this is fascinating, folks. Frank Serpico is our guest, a legend, the true man of character and integrity, in my view, and I believe in everyone's view. The original lamplighter, not whistleblower, perhaps, is the lamplighter is a better word. I think I'm coining that word from Mr. Serpico himself. And you know, you just described in the proceeding, you just described pretty much what's going on today. Nothing's changed, has it?
No, how can a civilian get justice in the court when the courts are corrupt? You know, and if our police, if we can't go to our police for protection, we're lost. We can't have this us against them. It has to be all of us together, you know. The cops, you know, they're our first line of defense. You know, unfortunately, we saw what happened for 9/11, how many firemen and police lost their lives, but there's something to that, too, that they gave them faulty equipment because they were cutting corners. You know, when it comes to people's safety, who put their lives on the line, they shouldn't cut corners. But these are the bureaucrats and the deals that they make. It's all for themselves. You know, I firmly believe we do not live in a democracy. We live in a plutocracy. It's controlled by a handful of the super rich, and, you know, the working man, the disenfranchised, are the victims. You know, they get picked on for minor violations. I was standing in Albany one day, the state's capital, and two white cops jump out of an unmarked car with their Glocks, and there's three black men in front of their door. And ask for ID. I don't have no ID. I live here. You know, so what's your name? They write them summonses, and they get back in the car, and I said, you know what? I said, plead not guilty, and I'll show up as your witness. And he said, what's the use? You can't fight the system. Now, what happens to that poor guy? He becomes a criminal. Why? Because he's not going to show up. So then they get a warrant out for him. Then they arrest him. Now they just rented another room in prison because that's what the prison industry is all about. It's like buying a tenement house, and you don't make any money unless you rent it out. So you rented it out to the state and you get paid for every guy that or gal that's in prison. And our prisons are filled mostly with people for nonviolent offenses, and drug offenses should be a medical problem. It shouldn't be a criminal problem.
And I've heard you, Mr. Serpico, I've heard you talk extensively on the fake war on drugs or the war on drugs that shouldn't be. And I agree with you on that. The numbers bear it out. The facts bear it out. And I would urge everyone to listen to Mr. Serpico's YouTube videos where they're available on this issue. You're absolutely right, sir. You are.
Yeah, even, our poor veterans that come home, you know, and I got my buddies, you know, one guy said to me, you know, if the cops were smart, they'd knock on my door in the morning and say, here, smoke, put a gun to my head and say, here, smoke this. He was talking about a joint. You know, I mean, do people know the cost to the lives of the veterans and what they went through? And then they can't even smoke some, you know, now they're saying, oh, well, medical marijuana, they're going to give okay now for PTSD. There's, I'm trying to think of one vet who unfortunately took his life. He had two Purple Hearts. He was on 64 combat missions in Iraq and Afghanistan, and he got the bum's rush from the VA.
Someone help us out here. There you go.
Right?
I believe that was from your part of the country, I believe, but I could be wrong.
Yeah. And there's hundreds more like that, you know, and it's just, we're just being used by the system, you know, by the, you know, this law and order is not a real law and order. You know, it's forced with the club and the gun and the courts and the prisons. It's not what it should be around. people,
it's right.
You know,
and Mr. Serbico, I just want to tell people that you served 2 years in South Korea, in the Korean Peninsula. In fact, at age 17, I believe.
Yeah,
I could be wrong on that.
Yeah,
you're a veteran.
Yeah. So now I'm a year older on my old ID card. Jeez, I'm 82.
Yeah, that's when guys like you and I could lie about our age, okay, and get away with it, you know, because they didn't have the databases. But yeah, you know, but thank you.
I'd be more than glad to take you, you know. And you know, there's so many unsung heroes in this world, you know, that I had a friend, that's another story, but a little Dutch kid. They called him Hitler's nemesis because he was in Nazi-occupied Germany, and he helped the troops out, and then they left, and he joined the Dutch Merchant Marine when he jumped ship in Virginia, and he joined the U.S. Navy, and then they found out not only wasn't he of age, he wasn't even an American citizen, and the president, I got all this paperwork because he became a friend of mine, and then he was killed. And the president gives him an honorary citizenship, and he turns around and joins the Air Force. So, you know, this guy like that you never hear about. And
that's right.
And like Daniel Somers with two Purple Hearts, he didn't even accept his Purple Hearts. He said, "I didn't get hurt bad enough." And then
wow.
Like one guy told me about one of our congressmen. I think he was a lieutenant. But he hurt his thumb, and he got
probably slammed in the file cabinet, right? Yeah, and but see, it's guys like you, Mr. Serpico, who have the history, the weight, the integrity, that point things like this out. And you know, the way we treat our veterans is just horrible. And I think in part, do you think it's kind of by design in a way? I mean, or is it just incompetence, or is it deliberate?
You know, I think incompetence is letting them off too easy. They just, you know, what do they care? You know, I mean, look at the assignments. That's why I pointed out Somers, because, you know, they send him on his missions. That was bad enough, but then he's got to lie about it. That was the hard part. The cover-ups, and that happens in the police, it happens in the military. How the hell are you going to live with that?
Right.
They shouldn't be forced to do that. It's immoral, and, you know, they tell you, you don't have to follow an unjust order. Yeah, right, try it.
Yeah, exactly.
Especially in a combat situation.
You know, time flies so fast. We only have about 10 minutes left of our time together, and boy, I'll tell you, man, I've just so enjoyed this. We haven't covered a lot, but in the remaining 10 minutes we've got, what do you want to talk about? The floor is yours, because there's so much that we can learn from you, and so much we can you know, that you could tell us on what's on your heart.
I know. At the beginning of the program, I want to say, you know, Doug, you are such a fortunate man, and I wanted to say it to you and Joe, to have a father and son, and, you know, that people don't know, you know, what a gift that is, you know, while they're here, and to enjoy and honor each other, because, you know, when you're gone, you're gone, and it's such a wonderful thing, you know, to have a son and a father to learn from, or a mother. You know, I learned from my father. My father was a POW, and so, you know, he saw a lot. And he was the first guy that taught me to stand up to authority. I was shining shoes in his store when I was a young teenager, and this is in the documentary, because we went back to my father's shoe shine store that was now a little cafe. And there I was, that warm summer day, and this cop walks in, you know, full uniform. I was, like, stunned to see him walk in. He climbs up the chair. I give him the best shine I'd ever given anyone in my life. And he says, are you done? And he walks out. He doesn't pay me. He doesn't say thank you. And I thought, wow, how can a cop do something like that? But the next week, my father works in the window repairing the shoes. He's got his little stand inside. And he sees the cop crossing the street, and he says, "Here comes that turd again," he says in Italian. Now, he didn't mean the uniform. He meant the guy that was in the uniform.
Right.
And he comes to the door. My father comes around the counter, and he says, "Good morning, officer. You want a shine?" He said, "Yeah." My father put out his hand, and he says, 10 cents, pay first. And this turd turned around and walked away and never came back. And that's what taught me to stand up to authority. So, you know, we have to teach our children, and the schools have to teach them, because, you know, they say, yeah, go to this. I get requests to, you know, lecture at police academy stuff. You know, it's a little late then. I don't think you really can teach morality, you know, and integrity. That's something you have to learn when you're small. You know, I get letters from kids. I got a letter the other day from a 13-year-old boy. He said he read the book, and he'll never forget me. And I said to him, you know, respect your body and your earth, because you take care of them, they'll take care of you. You know, stay away from that colored sugar water. You know, it's a crime what they do, the psychologists with their ads that influence kids subliminally before they're mature enough to think for themselves. I see these kids drinking this crap. It's just, that's criminal.
It is criminal, and it's indescribable how this has been marketed to our young. It's all, I mean, you know, I heard you talking in one interview about, you know, George R. Orwell, 1984, and of course Bernays and the advertising. And, you know, this is, yes, it is criminal, but it's by design, and we have to, like you said, we've got to resist authority, in quotation marks, the authority,
corrupt authority.
Corrupt authority, thank you. Yeah, we do. And we have to start thinking for ourselves and bring back the integrity that you've got, the character that you've got, into our youth, and of course into our police, police
and our schools. You know, that was another request I made to Clinton to appoint a panel to examine the problem we have with police and society and incorporate it into our children's school program. And the other thing, I wanted Joe to get a medal. Because then cops would say, oh, look at that. See, good cops get rewarded. But yes. Today, good cops get punished by the system, you know, because they don't want lamplighters. And the reason why I call them lamplighters is because when I worked in, you know, the inner city, and you turn on the lights, you see the roaches scamper for the woodwork. It's the same thing with politicians. But the thing is, they've become so brazen today that they defy. Like I said, I have them on film. Where do you go with it? They know there's no place to go because they are the system. I complained to the judiciary, who controls the whatever they call it in Albany. That was one thing I appreciated when Trump said so-called judge.
Yeah,
and
I
then
did too.
Even NPR, they started attacking and said, you can't attack our judiciary. Well, why not if it's corrupt? They've been going on for all these years. You know, I remember when I was a cop, they'd signed these search warrants. They were phony search warrants. And that's how people get killed and hurt because the judges don't do due process. And they just do the shortcuts. They take a little cash on the side. And, you know, it's what I can get, screw the little guy. But what I do believe, Doug, is that life deeds, whether they're good or evil, they're like a pebble that you throw into a pond. It makes ripples, you know, and they go to the farthest most shore. And you can even learn from the bad deeds that people do. You know, for example, like I said, I got chased out of Switzerland. I end up in Holland, and, you know, good comes from it. But we have to, you know, they say awake. People don't understand what that really means, you know. A lot of us, we're walking around like especially today with all this technology and cell phones, we're not aware of our environment. You know, the trees and the wind and, you know, nature, like Native American, like Chief Joseph, his letter to the president, people should look that up and see how poetic it was and what foresight he had. And I just got invited to write an essay for the, who's the guy that wrote Walden Pond? Henry David Thoreau.
Thoreau, okay.
It's his 200th anniversary. And I based it on what happened to me here, and I called it My Walden. You know Thoreau, right?
Right, exactly. Wow.
He said, a life without principle is not worth living. And that's what we have to teach our children. And I said, they have desecrated my Walden with their greed.
How poetic.
I say to people, you know, people say, you want to make money? You want to do some lectures? I said, no, I got enough. Well, I got this. And I said, are you hungry? No. You got clothes on your back? Yeah. You got a roof over your head? Yeah. What are you complaining about? Does your car take you where you want to go? You know, what are you going to give in to the commercialism and become? I tell kids, what are you wearing that advertising, those bold letters? You're paying to advertise that piece of trash that you're wearing that somebody got a couple of cents for, and, you know, these labels. It's amazing how they what they do to your mind, you know, and this is what I mean.
Exactly. Frank, Mr. Serpico, I got to stop you there. We're at the music already. I just want to say what a distinct honor and pleasure it is to have
you.
May God bless you. I want to shake your hand someday.
Bless you. And Lou is doing well, like a lot of other vets. He found a little secluded spot, and he just wants to be left alone. And so it was a pleasure talking to you, and God bless you. And
God bless you.
I don't know if Joe heard what I said, but you can tell him.
I'm here.
He did.
Thank you for joining
us. Thank you, Mr. Serpico. God bless you. We'll talk soon again. God bless you. Thank you so very much. Ladies and gentlemen, a national treasure, in my view, a hero, a man of character and integrity, Frank Serpico, a man like no other, and I'm just so happy to know him. We're going to be right back. Stay right where you're at.
The coolest thing you'll ever see in your life. It's really neat. Really a super device. All right. You need just 2 teaspoons of ordinary table salt, a little water, but a bang, you're charging your rechargeable batteries. Super G-Mag Chargeable is affordable. It's lightweight, weighs about 8 ounces. It's durable. It's EMP proof, and it's environmentally friendly. Yeah, that it is. It'll provide safe and convenient power for recharging 6 AA batteries off the grid when other power sources aren't available anywhere, anytime, in any weather, day or night. Go to greeninnovative.com. That's greeninnovative.com. Folks, in these uncertain times, it just makes sense to have a sustainable backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important tasks, and that's preparing food. This is the way to go. There is nothing better than a Minuteman rocket stove from MinutemanStove.com. We all need a way to cook and a method to process water. I mean, think about it. Think about the many things that could happen to you. Minuteman rocket stove can provide your family or group the perfect solution. It's small, lightweight, wood-burning, and every bit as powerful as a kitchen stove. It's smoke. Fully self-contained for clean storage and transport. Because it's so efficient, it cuts down on your wood gathering and processing chores to a tenth what would be required if cooking the old-fashioned way over an open fire. So don't rely on gas or fuel stoves. Prepare your family. Prepare for yourself. Order a Minuteman rocket stove today. It's going to make bad times much better. Folks, MinutemanStove.com. MinutemanStove.com. Need I say more?
You should have a Minuteman, the survival stove in an ammo can.
For investors, timberland has become the symbol of safety. Global tropical timber demand continues to surge as the world's population increases. The need for managed, sustainable timber production forests has never been greater. When stock markets crash, trees keep growing. Direct ownership of fully managed tropical timberland acreage is now available to accredited investors. Prime, valuable hardwood groves close to the beautiful Costa Rican border generate and maintain superior long-term wealth. Consider visiting our forest plantations. Qualified accredited investors should go to PreciousTimberProfits.com or dial 855-888-6288 for more information. Call 855-888-6288 or visit PreciousTimberProfits.com. This announcement does not constitute either an offer to sell securities or a solicitation of an offer to purchase. Offering made by prospectus only. 855-888-6288, PreciousTimberProfits.com, PreciousTimberProfits.com.